So good morning. Welcome to a session entirely devoted to navigation in Android. My name's Rich Fulcher. I'm one of the interaction designers on the Android user experience team.
And I'm Adam Powell. I'm a framework engineer in Mountain View.
And we both kind of care passionately about navigation. In fact, when I first applied to work at Google 3 years ago, resolving questions with back was part of my first interview to become an interaction designer here. So we're going to take you through a lot of content today. So to get started, to really kind of understand tasks in Android, first you have to have a good understanding of how tasks behave. And then Adam will help set the stage for that.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of early Android apps talked about being task managers, but generally they were actually talking about managing processes. In Android, a process can be a container for multiple components, and a task can contain activities hosted by many different processes. They really aren't the same thing.
So let's just do a couple of examples of this. This is a really simple task that we'll build out. We're going to open Gmail, and we're going to dive in and view a conversation. And the way I'm going to show a bunch of examples during this talk is with this format. The left-hand side of the screen will show kind of the state of the task stack as activities are added to it. And the right-hand side will show kind of the screen progression that the user experiences as they navigate. So starting here, we start at the home screen. We have kind of the launcher activity at the base of the task stack for us. Clicking on the Gmail icon from home opens up the activity for the Gmail conversation list. I'm just going to use wireframes throughout this talk just to kind of keep the focus on the navigation itself. And another, so that has added the conversation list activity onto the task stack. If I navigate deeper, I go down into a particular conversation to view the messages inside of that, then the conversation view is added as well. And that's kind of just building a very simple task. Another slightly more complicated example involves activities that are coming from multiple applications. You know, Adam mentioned that we can do this within a single task. That's one of the strengths of Android. So I'm going to start at home again. I'm going to build into enter into talk, where I see the friend list, you know, the list of everybody I can have a conversation with. I'll pick a particular friend from that list, go into the chat view, that activity gets added on. Now let's say that friend had sent me a link to a YouTube video. I can continue into a different application, in this case, I can go to YouTube, and that activity is added to the task stack as well. You know, the same system, we're just adding and adding and adding on top to the task stack. And I can go further. If I wanted to watch this video and then share it with a friend, I can hit the share button, and that'll take me to Gmail's compose screen, yet another activity that would just drop onto the task stack. So now we finished this example. We've got launcher at the root of the stack. We've got activities from three different applications, all part of this one continuous task. And this is the way that tasks have always worked inside of Android, all the way back to Android 1.0. And one particular control, the back button, has been along for the whole ride. Although, over time, it's kind of changed its appearance a little bit. It's now trimmer than it used to be. So back works by unwinding that task stack that we build up. It actually unwinds the global history stack. We'll get into that in a little bit more detail. It finishes off the current activity. So when I hit back, the activity has the opportunity to do things, you know, save out any local state that it wants to preserve, and then kind of clears itself away off the task stack. And the activity manager brings forward the next lower down activity and presents that to the user. Now, of course, there are a couple of exceptions. Most of these just relate to when back is kind of handles a local bit of state within the activity. So things like if the keyboard, the virtual keyboard is displayed, back will receive that. If there are dialogues or spinners that have popped open, back will dismiss those. You know, if you have a selection mode, back will get rid of that. And then a subsequent press of back in all of those cases will actually act as the navigation. There are also a few instances where back is kind of completely taken over by the application. The browser is the most obvious and notable example of that, where back becomes back through your browsing history, kind of historical browsing context within browser. So going back to the two examples we covered at the start, what does back do? Well, it's actually really simple in both cases. back from Gmail just pops that activity off the stack, and the conversation list comes to the front. Hitting back again finishes that activity, returns me to home. Same is true for the slightly more complex case. You know, again, we built up these different activities from different apps, but back just walks through them just as comfortably. Back, 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 back to home. And once we're at home, there's no place further back to go. So kind of back loses meaning once it lands in that context. You've got a safe root point to do all of your exploration from. So now Adam's going to talk a little bit about how multiple tasks work.
Right, we've been focused on single tasks so far, but how do multiple tasks behave? So you might have noticed that the recents list here is a whole lot like something else that you might be used to using day to day. So it's very similar to just your browser tab list. But so how do tasks really work in the context of Android with this? I mean, and what are all those intent flags that you see in the developer documentation? There's a lot about how tasks work internally that isn't immediately obvious, but it really helps make things feel right to the user when they're all put together. And it's useful for you as a developer to know how a bunch of this stuff is going on under the hood, even if your users don't have to. So, Activity Manager, which is the component that sort of ties all of this navigation together, sees the world as one big global activity stack sorted by task. So, this might explain some of the behavior that you've seen here and there that might have made you scratch your head. So, if I hit back a few times, I'll pop from the top of the stack until I hit a home. Home then prevents me from popping further. The rest of the stack still exists, though. This is part of my global navigation history across the system. So we said before that your list of tasks in Android is very similar to your tabs in a browser. So how do you open a new tab? How do you create a new task? So in an example here, from home, we open Talk. A new task is created. And further navigation within Talk just adds to that same task. So how many of you use tabbed browsing out there? Show of hands. Up. OK, pretty much everybody. So keep your hand up if you end up with way too many tabs open at the end of the day. Oh, look at that, just as many people. So we really didn't want to have the same problem happen in Android. Because manually curating your browser tabs really stinks. You kind of have to do this manual garbage collection pass every now and then just to make sure that things stay cleaned up and that you can still understand what the heck you're doing on your desktop. So we have this idea called task affinity in Android. Task affinity lets us keep a single context associated with a task instead of multiple tasks that are very, very similar. And this avoids having multiple tabs open for doing the same thing. So how does this work? When we launch an activity into a new task here, and a task with the same affinity already exists, then the existing task gets brought to the front. Now, if the intent that we just launched matches the root intent of that existing task, the one that's at the very bottom of the task stack, then we're done. We have nothing else to do. So what it means for an intent to match is a little unintuitive if you're not familiar with this particular little detail here, is that intent extras don't count. They're always app-specific, and the system really doesn't even pretend to know how to unparcel them and compare them for any sort of equivalence. So that means that intents can match even if they have very different extras. But all of this put together means that this is why Launcher is able to act as a task switcher on its own. Shortcuts always launch a new task, and it's always the root activity of that task if it was already existing. So before Honeycomb, this is how a lot of users got around the system. You would just hit home, and then you would reopen the app that you wanted, but it would reopen to exactly the same state that it was in the previous time that you were using it.
So now we've got a handle on how tasks work. We've talked a little bit about affinity, how back behaves. But navigation has evolved during Android's history. And in particular, we'll talk about up and recents and how they've been added. So let's bring the timeline back up. You know, by the start of 2010, we knew we kind of had a problem, or more exactly, that we knew that our users were having several problems when it came to navigation within Android. Part of this comes from, we had system-level controls for navigation. We had back, which we've talked about, and we had home. Home was kind of a task switcher, but it was a little bit awkward for that. I'd have to hit the home key, I'd come back to the home screen. Maybe the task I'm trying to switch to isn't on that home screen, so I might have to locate it. Or maybe it is on any of the home screens, and I have to bring up the All Apps drawer to find it. We had a more elegant way of doing that, which was our recents control, which you'd invoke by kind of long pressing on home. And it would bring up not a lot of details about the tasks. You'd get kind of 5 application icons and 5 labels. But we knew from listening to the users that people just didn't know this function existed. It was really a very hidden power user feature. And users were craving something that was a lot more obvious than that. What about for the application level navigation controls? These are switching between tasks. What about for or moving within a task? What about inside an app? We didn't have any story really there. Now, that didn't stop charming, clever developers such as yourselves from coming up with ways to work around this. One popular one was to take the menu button and to add additional actions into that that would target specific activities within your application. So it might be that you added an action to go to the home of your app or to go to a common screen like an account list or an inbox, those types of things. Another approach that a lot of apps took was to take the back button and try to turn it into something like a structural navigation element by overriding its behavior. A lot of apps did this. I've worked on apps that did this, Gmail. But it made the back button very inconsistent for users. They couldn't really predict what was going to happen when in certain contexts it would get overridden and do something different. So we wanted to address those. I think a problem that happened with a lot of early Android applications is that it was easy to build them in a way that it was just kind of a bag of activities that you would throw your activities into and you could shake it up and the user could kind of move to different activities through whatever affordances you wanted to give them. And there might be a top doorway in, but once you started kind of diving in a little bit, you could get these paths that kind of were a little bit formless, a little bit unpredictable. You could even have kind of circuits in the path where I start from one screen and follow a forward navigating path that takes me back to that same screen, in which case back gets quite interesting. We definitely heard from coworkers, from users, a lot of frustration. And when people are frustrated, they come talk to their designers. So we didn't want to be associated with this. We wanted to take this problem head on and really try to do something about it. So we did. We started at I/O 2 years ago. Myself and a few other members of the user experience team were on a stage about this size, talking about 5 interface patterns that we thought were helpful for app developers. And one of the ones we introduced in that session talked about was the action bar. So the action bar was trying to solve 2 problems. The first was to make the most common actions more visible, and you've kind of heard about that in the sessions earlier today, so I won't go there. But the other thing I tried to do is kind of give the sense of structure and place to the app. The action bar was intended to replace the old title bar element. Internally, we called it the interactive title bar for quite a while. So the area at the left would give you the app icon and the name of the activity that you were currently viewing, but it would also be a touch target for kind of jumping back up to the top of the application, in the same way that a user might expect to kind of touch at the logo at the upper left corner of a website to kind of come back to the home of that site. So we're trying to play off those conventions. Now, that said, what we gave you at I/O 2 years ago was far from perfect. It was an interface pattern. It wasn't supported by the framework. It wasn't a code pattern yet. We were just kind of offering, this would be a good thing for you to go and do. And it also only supported 1 target, which was navigating directly to the top of the application. And for apps, for some apps, that's fine and that's suitable. For apps with deeper hierarchy, you want to have a little bit more subtlety than that. At the time, we were demonstrating the Facebook app and the Twitter app during that session. And those have kind of a much richer set of activities. They kind of have entire subsections to those apps. And a little bit more navigation control would have been appropriate. So in 2010, we did Gingerbread. Didn't really change the story there. But in 2011 and 2012, we really started tackling this problem. We wanted to take the direction we'd laid out with that kind of alpha version of the action bar and really reinforce the story that was there. And even as we were chatting at I/O 2 years ago, we were already hard at work on our tablet UI. So we started rolling that thought right into Honeycomb, what would become the full action bar. And then in ICS, we brought it to phone with even more capabilities. And navigation was a critical part of that. So a lot of what we tried to do in those two releases was motivated by what we saw from user research. We did very frequent testing for Honeycomb. You know, literally, we would have 2 or 3 sessions a week with 4 or 5 different participants in a given session for 4 months when we were testing Honeycomb. And during all of those tests, we were testing navigation to some extent. We were testing a lot of different applications, but that kind of glue that let the user get to the applications and switch between them was always something that we were looking at. When I think about evaluating what research can do for you, I think the wrong question that people ask too often is, you know, they do an experiment and then they say, well, did the product test well? I think a more valuable question to ask is, you know, did we glean some new insights to the problems that we're trying to solve? And when it comes to navigation and the work we did in Honeycomb, we learned a lot. Our 4 big takeaways were that kind of this notion of the navigation being in the upper left corner of the screen, calling back to their experience with the web and with other devices, was really powerful for users and felt very natural. Users wanted to make a clear distinction between navigation that kept you inside an application and navigation controls that were outside of it. So, I mean, users definitely had a distinction between things that we would render in the application's content area and things that would be rendered in the system bar, or more typically at the time, that would be kind of physical hardware controls that were on the device. There was sometimes kind of a mapping problem moving between those two sets for users. And users also wanted to have a safe form of navigation. And they wanted to know that the affordances or the controls that they would use would be able to keep them within the app that they were currently viewing. Users were incredibly frustrated when they would press a back button and unexpectedly be jettisoned from an app. You know, that's back to our bag of activities from before. And then finally, quick, obvious task switching was super important to them, so we wanted to address that. So we added 2 controls in Honeycomb and ICS to cover those issues. Up was looking at kind of those first 3 issues, the upper left corner, the inside-outside problem, and the predictability of remaining within the application, that safety guarantee. And Recents was our way of taking that question of task switching and making it dead obvious for the user. So I'll go into detail on both of these. First, Up. Up is structural navigation. We've hit that point a couple of times today, but I'll hit it again. It's going to keep you in the app. When you're at the top of the app, you don't even see it because it's all about navigating in the app. You're at the top. There's no further to go. It's completely independent of the task state. So all those examples that I showed before of how the task stack builds, your behavior of Up isn't affected by what's on that task stack. It's based entirely upon the relationships between the different activities that you've constructed in your app, kind of the right parent-child relationships that exist there. It can alter the task stack as a side effect, but it's not dependent upon it. And then as a result, Up is not back. They sometimes will have the same effect for the user, but they behave differently. And there are a couple of critical cases where they're actually quite different. So let's kind of dive into those. So the first is when you're reading through, kind of doing a browsing session, and you're going to related views. So an example here that we'll use is I've gone into the Play Store. I'm looking at a list of books. Maybe it's the featured books. And I pick a book that I want to view more details about, and I go and I see that book details screen. Now, part of a lot of store experiences is that part of the items display will give you a list of related content items, you know, that users also liked, that might show other books. And when you browse to that, and you click on that, we give you another book details activity. And now we've got 2 book details activity. You know, the same type of activity, but 2 different instances of it get built onto the task stack. You know, and obviously, this can extend from there. So the question becomes, you know, Back will do one thing. Back will unwind you through that browsing history. I was looking at this book, I went and looked at a related book, now I'd like to come back to that first book. Up is structural navigation. Up gives you the ability to bypass that intermediate state and return up to that original list. Now, that may not seem like that big a deal for this kind of short example, but imagine, you know, browser sessions that could get quite lengthy. I might go from book to book to book to book to book to book, and then in the old school, I could go back to back to back to back to back to back to back. Up lets you skip all that and just kind of jump right up to the list. The second instance where back and up differ critically is when you have a task that's being built up from multiple applications. So I'll go through one here. I'll start at home. I'll go into YouTube. I'm browsing a list of YouTube videos. I'll pick one out, and I'll watch it. And then I'll elect to share it over Gmail. So the Gmail compose activity comes to the front of the task stack. So from here, back is going to do the natural thing. If I decide, I don't really want to share that cat video with my friend, back gets me out of that context, takes me back to the lovely cat video. But if instead I wanted to remain within Gmail, you know, maybe the fact of firing up that compose reminded me of something else I needed to do, the up lets me stay inside. And in fact, it'll take me to a higher level activity that wasn't in the task stack at any point. This is going to graduate me up to the conversation list in the inbox that's associated with it. And a couple of critical things happen here. We add that activity. We finish the compose activity. That one's gone. And we split the task. So we have one task, our old YouTube task, now sans that useless Gmail compose activity. And we have a new task, the Gmail task, focused on the conversation list. And we've also carried along Home's launcher activity for the ride, so that if I'm at the conversation list and now I hit back, I'll actually wind up back at home. Recents is actually pretty straightforward. It behaves the same as it did for that hidden function way back in Android.1. But what we significantly changed in Honeycomb was to kind of just give the user a much cleaner interaction with it. You know, we introduced a dedicated button in the system or in the navigation area. It brings the entire task stack forward, and we just added a lot of detail that helps the user make that decision. Instead of just getting the name and the app icon, we're now giving the user those plus a screenshot of the topmost activity in that task stack, which is helpful for both identifying, you know, where's that task I'm trying to get back to? Oh, it's this map. Yeah, it's that map. As well as kind of orienting the user for the switch. You know, the user's already kind of remembering the context that they're going to be going into even before that animation completes. So it's a much less jarring transition for the user, which made it much better. You know, finally, we're delivering on that great multitasking story that we always knew Android was capable of supporting.
So coming back to our diagram from before, when I choose task B from recents here, what actually happens? So when you bring task B to the top using the recents UI, recents is starting the root activity of task B with these flags. Remember, when we start the root activity of a task, it brings it forward. So we've already covered what new task does, but what about this task on home thing? So this was a new flag that we added in Honeycomb, and this is the flag that allows us to bring launcher along for the ride, like Rich mentioned, to sort of keep this more consistent state that is more predictable for users when they switch around. So after that switch, task B is now on top with home immediately beneath it. And if I back through Gmail, I'll end up on home no matter how I got into Gmail, just as I expect.
So one last visit to the timeline. So we talked about Honeycomb, we talked about ICS, and today we're proud to announce nothing else new. We haven't changed it. You're welcome.
So now you know a little bit more of the history of how we got where we are here. And it's important to remember that it's really easy to find these local maxima for your app's experiences and sort of implement special functionality to make that happen. But following system conventions makes your app more intuitive to people that already know how other apps behave in the system, and when those apps follow those conventions too. But as you've already seen, the Android framework has a lot of intricate options and opportunities to do things differently. So how do we actually implement all these guidelines that we're talking about here? Well, back is really easy. We just leave it alone. Let it go ahead and unwind fragment transactions or finish activities just as it does by default, and let it move to the previous activity in the task, so on and so forth. But what about this up thing? So we talked before about how up can switch tasks. When you deliberately task switch, here's how you bring Launcher along for the ride the way that Recents does. And we talked about this a little bit, but this really helps reinforce this hub and spoke model of tasks for the users, with Launcher as this hub. Each one of the tasks kind of splits out, forming the spokes. When a task is fully replaced, then traversing back through a synthetic stack and returning to the previous task instead feels really, really weird. So landing at home reinforces structure. So when we implement up, we need to fully replace the task that's there, again, because of this new tabs problem that we talked about before. By replacing the task, we're effectively sort of faking history, though, and some of you may be wondering, you know, why would you really want to do that? Why not just have back be back? Why are you lying to the users?
Yeah, there are actually a few different cases where the activity that's a logical parent may or may not be something that's already on that task stack. So we'll see this in more detail when we talk about widgets and notifications in just a little bit, and actually behave very similarly to up in that regard.
So that means that another ability that we'll need is being able to replace an existing task. So for example, imagine that the user is at home with task state already built up for Gmail, Talk, and YouTube. That's A, B, and C is listed on the slide here. So from home, the user navigates into Gmail from its widget. So this needs to be sort of a deep link in there. Then it's the same story for up when you're composing from a different task, like in our previous example. So using that widget will make the old task state of Gmail invalid. So we use this clear task flag, since we don't want leftover state or duplicate Gmail tasks anywhere in the global activity stack. So as much as systems programmers really enjoy packing arrays full of values and getting exact flag combinations right through all of that, we really wanted to provide a little bit of a nicer interface on top of that to help get the details right. So in both the Jelly Bean framework and in the support library, Task Stack Builder is that nicer interface. So it can determine the full synthetic task stack that you'll need based on the structural hierarchy from the declared parent activities in your manifest, as well as generate some pending intents for notifications and launcher widgets when you need those. We've got some code examples in the SDK that you can take a look at for more details. So how do we pull all these little pieces together to implement up? Well, the good news is that in Jelly Bean, you don't have to. It's all completely done for you. Just give us the metadata in your manifest about the parent activities, and we'll take care of everything else. So sometimes you need to specify some other intent extras to those activities along the way. For example, if one of your parent activities is a category view, and you need to know what category you're viewing, you may express that as some sort of an intent extra. So in that case, you can override an activity method and edit the intents in the task stack builder that's being used under the hood whenever it's needed. So we'll also be bringing this to the AppCompat library, component of the support library that we talked about yesterday in the multi-versioning Android UIs session, if any of you were there.
Okay, so the last major topic we need to cover as far as navigation goes is widgets and notifications. And these are both examples of a pattern we kind of internally call deep links. You know, these are things that let you bypass certain kind of intro screens in an app and target an activity that's deeper within its hierarchy. Widgets are pretty straightforward in the sense that, you know, we know that those are always going to be new tasks. You're always firing them from home. They're effectively acting as a launcher activity that can apply task affinity, as Adam talked about before. But they're not that complex. Notifications are a little trickier, so we'll cover those last. So here's just a quick example showing widgets. So back to the old format. We've got the task stack and the screens building up. So from home, I have a Gmail widget on my home screen. And I see a message, sorry, a conversation within my inbox. And I touch on that. That lets you bypass the conversation list screen, and you navigate directly to the conversation view. But actually representing that screen in the task stack is valuable. You know, keeping that conversation list around matters a lot. It doesn't matter so much right now, like right at this instant. But where it matters a lot to the user is when they've been inside Gmail for a while. You know, they come in, they read that message, they read several other conversations past that, and they've been in the app for a little while, and they hit back. They're not aware at that instant that, oh, the doorway I used to enter was the widget, so of course it's going to kick me out to home. It's a surprising change if we were to just do that. So we don't. When the widget calls into the conversation view, it can add the conversation list activity to the task stack. That way, when the user hits up or back, they're being kept within the application. If they really wanted to go home, well, they could have hit home to begin with, or they could just hit back again. Notifications. So a common flow for notifications is, you know, I'm in one app. So I start home, I launch again into Gmail, I'm reading a conversation, and in comes a notification. I pull down the shade, no activity, no task stack change there. That's just purely local. And I've got a new notification from Talk. A new message has come in, and I want to read that. So I tap that notification, and now we have the Talk activity to deal with. And we're going to go straight to the chat view. Again, we're bypassing that friends chat or the friends list that we'd seen in the earlier examples. And the question here is, what should the relationship between, you know, that new activity and the prior task be? Is this going to be a new task? Is this just something that we put on top of the previous task?
So knowing what you now know about how all of this sort of fits together and what we found our user expectations were not just right immediately, but several hours later, this really doesn't work. We can't just hop back to the previous task. I mean, this is something that became muscle memory for a lot of users over time in previous versions of Android. You know, you answer a notification, you do whatever you need to do there, and then you hit back, and then you continue doing what you're doing. So this actually caused us a lot of problems. It was trivially easy to create this super confusing state that users wouldn't discover until much, much later. So something really needed to change. So the problem that it created was that the task stack was no longer predictable. If you last opened Gmail through a notification, hours or days later, your Gmail task state would be very different than if you had opened it through the front door. So as you go switching back and forth between tasks, just as you use your device, then this gets really massively confusing, and users just started attributing this to Android being dumb or confusing one thing or another. So the idea of back staying within the current task is something that we weren't willing to give up. There's a ton of psychology behind maintaining that expectation in each task. Context switches are very, very powerful. People remember a lot about an old context when they switch back, and then they forget about the context that they switched from. So have you ever walked through a doorway into another room and suddenly forgotten what you were doing? I mean, you're not alone in this.
Yeah, there was actually kind of a pretty well-known psych study that covered this exact topic that got some play in the popular press, so you may have heard about it. And it looked at what happens when participants were asked to engage in memory tests while they were walking through doorways. And they did it in both physical and in virtual environments. Spoiler alert, people forgot stuff when they walked through the doorway. So we didn't want our users to kind of suffer the same fate when they did a task switch. I have to just kind of call out in this quote, I love this little bit that talks about episodes of activity. You know, I read this quote, I swear I didn't doctor it, and that just screams task stack to me when I look at it.
Okay, so we have all of these crazy flags available. Can we cheat a little bit? Like, can we really keep that flow of just hitting back and going right back to where we wanted to be? So here's one possible trick. We could start a new task, but don't set the task on home flag. Well, this trick will make the back button work for this use case, but the rest of the existing task still ends up being there to mash back through, and that's really not very great. And if we add the clear task flag, then it really leaves us with a bogus state. Back becomes unpredictable either way. If you clear the task, then returning to that task later from recent means you back right back into home again. If you don't, then you have to back through the rest of the task before you get back to the previous task, and you still lost the quick back. So that's not going to work. So, okay, what if we really, really cheat? You can try a really dirty trick here, but this will leave this orphaned activity hanging around that you won't actually be able to get back to in any sort of a discoverable way. If you answered a notification and then wrote half of a message in talk, then you're basically hosed if you leave and want to come back. And then you get into this matter of like, okay, well, we could go ahead and make everyone try and save drafts for everything that you're doing, one thing or another, but we really didn't think it was a good idea to expect developers or even want them to take on this much duplication and special casing. So notifications are supposed to be this first-class thing in Android. But just as a note, this trick actually is useful in some other cases. So if you have like a deliberately orphaned summary dialogue or a screen that shows more than a notification can on its own, but it's really just an extension of that notification before you jump into the content, then this can be really useful. Calendar reminders are one place where we do this in the base Android system, when you get sort of a pop-up that shows multiple reminders that have been collapsed. So the solution that we finally settled on was that we treat notifications just like we treat widgets in UP. So that means that navigating into an app from a notification replaces the target task entirely with that same sort of deep link synthetic task stack that we use for UP and for widgets. So conceptually, that means notifications have become a shortcut for going home, clearing out the current task stake by swiping away in recents, opening the app, and then just following the shortest path down the UI to get to the content that you actually cared about. But you're doing it all in one step. So Task Stack Builder gives you an easy way to accomplish this. So the implications of this are that, yeah, we really did just lose that case of you can't just use back from answering a notification to switch to the previous task anymore. And it is kind of unfortunate. But the good news is that since we've elevated recents to this first class element that's right there on the navigation bar all the time, then getting back to the last thing that you were doing is very simple. So the most recent task is always sorted closest to the button, so it's a very quick two taps to get back to the previous thing that you were doing. But more importantly, we realized from all the user testing that it was less important to keep this quick back than it was not to surprise people with a bogus task state much, much later down the road. And to sort of reinforce this idea of the task switch as we go back and forth, we really try and tell the story with animation in Jelly Bean.
Okay, so wrapping up, three things that I'd love you to take away from this session. The first is think about the structure of your app early on in your planning process. You know, the first talk this morning did a really good job of kind of illustrating how you think about what you want your app to achieve, kind of what is the app in and of itself. You know, don't be the bag of activities. You don't have to be like this exact hierarchy. There are a lot of different hierarchies that are out there, and there are a lot of just apps that you can look at as exemplars of that. I mean, you could be broad or narrow. You could be shallow or deep. You could be balanced or imbalanced in your hierarchy. Let the activities and their relationships drive the structure that you try to implement.
So another thing that we'd like you to do is don't just test your app navigation in isolation. It's very, very easy when you're in an intense debugging session to just, you know, make some quick changes, push the new APK to your device, test it out really quick, just within your app that just launched from your debugger, and say, okay, great, it works, we're done. The thing is that as soon as you have any sort of sophisticated navigation in your application, this doesn't actually exercise all of the different cases that users are going to run into. Make sure that you test all of the navigation in and out of your app. That's the notifications, widgets, and any sort of intent fulfillment that happens from other applications. If your application can act as a viewer for certain types of content, if other applications can share to your app, make sure that you test all of those things too. And most importantly, go ahead and dog food your own application too. Test it over a number of days. See how it interacts with other applications on the system and make sure that it's behaving consistently with the other applications that people are going to be using day to day.
And then finally, you know, why are we doing this? Why do I care about this so much? Users always win. Your users always win when apps behave consistently. You've kind of heard the consistency point a number of times today, but it's important. You know, there's no need for a user to learn how to navigate your application if you're doing the standard, doing the consistent thing. They can take the knowledge they've learned in one app and apply it to yours directly. You also don't have to spend time, you know, introducing a tutorial, teaching the users how to use your navigation. It gives the users a sense of mastery. That ability to take the knowledge learned in one place and apply it into a different context is what contributes to that. And your app is the beneficiary of that. You kind of get, the user gets all these positive associations with it. You know, Adam Auction often talks about this being, and one way that users express this is they say, oh, that app's intuitive. It's just doing the things they would expect to do without having had to learn what the app is asking them to do. And it lets the users concentrate on the kind of key things your app is trying to deliver. And then finally, it makes the whole experience feel better to the users. Your app, all the apps, all the devices. We're working really hard to try to bring consistency to all of the Google applications. And hopefully you'll notice in Jelly Bean, we've made a tremendous number of improvements when it comes to kind of using navigation consistently. I'm sure there's a couple that we've missed. We're working on it.
But we couldn't have missed any, Rich. I don't think that's possible.
Yeah. That's why they pay us the medium bucks. You know, we've covered a lot today. If you want to go back and review any of this material, I've tried to concentrate on the whys. You know, why did we come to these decisions that we've made? But if you just need the guidelines, they're in the design guide. If you go to the navigation pattern there, you can review it. It's got a lot of this content or other related examples that you can go through again. And with that, thank you very much, and thank you.